Let's learn. Maybe we'll discuss something. Okay, Chevesh. Okay, so we had over here, if you remember, at the beginning of the Sugya, next week we'll go on to the next Sugya, Daf Yavez and Mavez. But we mentioned it at the time, that the Gemara had a machlokes in Ula and Rav Nachman, how to treat Avadim with regards to a loan. Does just like a lender, a bank, has a lien on the properties of the borrower, and if they're subsequently sold to another party, could collect and seize those properties, can he also seize an Eved? Is there a lien on an Eved? And the opinion of Rava, the opinion of Ula in the name of Rabbi Elazar was that there is a lien on those on the Avadim, and they can be collected even after they've been sold. And the opinion of Rav Nachman is that there is no lien on Avadim. So, but the Gemara, when it was initially presenting this discussion, Amar Ula in the name of Rabbi Elazar, so Rav Nachman asked Ula, did Rabbi Elazar say, you know, you could even collect it once it's been sold to a third party? There's even a lien on the Avadim. Not only could you collect them from the borrower himself if he still retains ownership, but even after it's been sold. And Ula got scared, and Ula said, no, of course he meant only while the borrower retains possession of it. So then, what's the chiddush? You could seize any of his properties. So the chiddush is that it was sold, but he made it an apotiki. Once it was sold, but it was made an apotiki, so then, okay, it could be collected even after it's been sold. But generally speaking, there'd be no lien on Avadim unless it was made into an apotiki. That was the Gemara in Yudah from Mavez. Then, after Rav Nachman left, Ula told him the truth, that in the name of Rabbi Elazar, that there is, in fact, a lien on Avadim in all cases, in all situations, even if it was not made into an apotiki. And Rav Nachman was critical of Ula. He said, he only, you know, didn't tell the truth in front of my face because he was afraid of the kashas that I would ask him. Ishtamatanula, he was afraid of me. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you a kasha.
Go ahead.
From the Christmas.
No.
It basically, so the maskana yesterday that we had was that the chiluk between the machlokes is really smichas das.
Yeah.
So it's, I was thinking, I already asked the Rebbe about why in Tosfos he says that it's Shibud Midiraisa or Midirabana. Right? It just sounds like in the Tosfos and the Anna.
Yeah.
So I thought it was in the Uter. So as I read the Tosfos, it sounds like actually what Tosfos is doing is he's saying, right, he was explaining Rav Nachman's Shita that everything Midirabanan, it's like Metatlin. Midiraisa is Kikarka. And the reason why I mentioned Shibud is Midiraisa, is not Midiraisa. Midirabanan, he says it's Midirabanan.
Right.
Is because he wants to show that's why Rav Nachman holds over there.
Yes.
No. So then it has nothing to do with smichas das. If it was, you can do midiray from there. If it was midiraisa.
Ah, Tosis doesn't hold to that distinction. Tosis here thinks the difference between dinim derabanan and dinim deraisa had nothing to do with smichas das versus karka mitalva. No, we said in a different. We said that was Tosis elsewhere makes that distinction. Not with regards to Avadim, regards to Anavim Hamdim Libatzer, and some apply that distinction here too.
So that's what's the Machlokes according to Tosis?
According to Tosis,
it's not Smichas Das, so what's the Machlokes?
Yeah, it's a good kasha. But that's not what Tosis is asking.
Okay, fine.
Tosis is not trying to understand the Machlokes, the ruin of Nachman. Tosis is trying to, you know, how can we reconcile that with elsewhere where we see Avadim Arhok Shulakado?
Okay,
yeah, that's a good point. Very, very good. So we look over here, Rabbi says the Gemara, we've seen already in the Vlam Chesem at Aleph, where the Gemara tells us, Tana Rabbanan, two dots in the middle of Vlam Chesem at Aleph, Kvar Shalcha Malchus Rom, Mishnei Sar Diyos, Eitzel Te Chachmei Yisrael. That the Romans sent two delegations to Chachmei Yisrael, Lim Duno Torah Seichem, teach us your Torah. Kiru Vishanu Vishilshu Vishas P'tirasan, Amulahem, you know, they taught them the Torah, then they taught them a third time, they reviewed it. And when they were about to leave, they said, Diktachim b'chol Torah seichem v'emesu, your Torah is wonderful and it's truthful. Chutz midavarzeh, with the exception of this item, Shatem oimrim, shor she Yisrael shenaga shor shor kanani potter. If your shor goes our shor, you're potter. Shor shor kanani, shenaga shor shor Yisrael. If a shor of a kanani goes a shor of a Yisrael, he's chayiv. Bein tam, bein mu, mishan nezik shor, miman of shach. He said, "This is, you know, the height of being inconsistent. Mamon of shach, ireyehu, you know, dafka, afil deknani. If it has to be a Jewish shar, so if a non-Jewish shar will go a Jewish shar, should also be pater." But if it doesn't have to be Re'ehu, is not Dafka a Yisrael, it's even a Kanani, so then, and that's why if we go Yorsha, we're obligated to pay, then if you go Asher, we should also be obligated to pay. So it's not fair. This is not, you're being disingenuous. Hypocritical. It's the height of hypocrisy. Okay. So Taisus asks, a little kash over here, Taisus Dibber Masel, Kiru Vishonu Vishilshu. By the way, how could you teach them Torah? The Mormon sent two delegations to Klai, so teach us your Torah. They taught them the Torah. They said everything is truthful with this one exception, which is the height of hypocrisy, that if you go our shore, you're potter. If we go your shore, you're chayiv, we're chayiv. So he says, by the way, how did they teach them Torah? The Pasuk says, Magad Varav LeYaakov. Pasuk can say for Tehillim, there's a mitzvah to teach Torah to Yaakov, Mishpatim Baal Yadom. And they don't know our Mishpatim, there's an Issa to teach them Torah. So it says Taisus, Yesh Loimar, the Baal Karkach also apidir Re'al Moshel. This is not one of the Gimel Averis HaKamursi. You're obligated to give up your life rather than teach Torah to a non-Jew. Okay. So they had no choice, basically, says Taisus. Whoa. So he asked the Yamsha Shlomo, the Marshal. He says, 1 minute. If over here they had a gun to the head, they said, look, if you don't teach us your Torah, we're going to kill you. And that's the reason they were allowed to teach them Torah. Why were they so stupid that they told them this hypocritical, inconsistent, unfair halakha? The Shorsho Kanani, Shinaga Shorsho Yisrael is Chayiv, and Shorsho Yisrael, Shinaga Shorsho Kanani is Potter. If someone, why would you teach them that halacha that is so insulting to the Romans, to the Kananim? Why didn't they just change what they were saying? Change the halacha. Filter it out. Censor it out. Especially if their lives were in danger. So look over here. It says the Yamsha Shlomo. Shamina Mehai Braisa. The also l'shano is divrei Torah afki hasakana. One is not allowed to change the content, the morals, the values, the mitzvahs of the Torah, even in a place of mortal danger. This is yaharig val yavar. What avera does it fit into? It's not gilui arayos. It's not avodah zarah. It's not shvichus damim. Rabbi said, what is it? To change the mitzvahs of the Torah because you're embarrassed about them under in a given context. It's chil Hashem. Chil Hashem. Ain chil Hashem. God is ever. Chayiv limtzar atzma aleh. You're obligated to give up your life. To lafi chad shenuya de toisves. Shemalchus harashor gozer aleh. V'lam lo yiru chakom shetal malchus harashor aleh. Their lives were in danger. Why didn't they just switch the halacha? Halo lo yisim sadavar kachik hazeh. There's nothing that's more insulting. Lomer ifnei ha'uma shanachlu peturim mehazekah. V'hem chayovim. This is the kind of double standard. V'chi lo hayaroy lochus chas v'shalom l'kama shemidois. Shmodos, Bechurbos, the Levik Minei, how many pogroms will be a result of this? How could they not take that into account? Befrat, Malchus HaRisha, Shechom HaShavos, and Rokei. So he says, must be, El Shmamina, he says at the end of the fourth line, Shemechuyav Emanu Limsar, Al Kiddush Hashem, you have to give up your life, rather than Vayu Kiddush Hashem. Ve'im Chas V'Shom, Yishana Adin, Havik a Kaifer B'Taris Moshe. To change from the Halacha would be like a Kaifer B'Taris Moshe. Brachever, where do we have a case? Where do we have an instance where they did change halacha?
The
Gemara Masechtas Megillah. The Septuagint, right? Look over here, four lines from the bottom. V'hod de'izah barakam de Megillah ma'aseh b'talmi shekines ayin bei zekenim. He brought in 72 zekenim to translate the Torah. And they changed a few things in order to prevent mistakes. So you see they changed something. First of all, he says they changed it in order so they shouldn't make mistakes. Okay. So if you're changing it, Dafka, in order to be Mamed Emes Alamito. And all 72 made the same changes. Obviously, there was some Siyata Deshmai and Ruach HaKodesh that was present in this incident that cannot be derived as a precedent. But to change one of the Dinei HaTorah is itself Yagvah Yavah. I got to your point in 1 second, but look over here, the Mesech LeSoifrim says, Ma'aseh b'zekenim, one of the things we fast for on Asar B'Teves, it was the day that the Tomi translated the Torah into Greek. What was so terrible about the day that it was translated into Greek? Ma'aseh b'zekenim, shekazal talmi ha'melech, asatari yavonis, v'haya hayom koshel yisrael kiyom shenas asar egel. It was as difficult as the day that the egel occurred, which was Avodah Zarah. What does this have to do with Avodah Zarah? So I would suggest what it has to do with Avodah Zarah is the following. It says when they translate it, whenever you translate anything, it's never able to be interpreted in the same way. Things are lost in translation by default, even if you don't intend for that to occur, certainly if you intend for that to occur, but even if you don't intend for that to occur, it's very difficult to prevent that from occurring. So that's why people were always opposed to, you know, in our times we take for granted that there's an art school Shas. When I was growing up, there was no such thing. And there was Cincino, which was somewhat controversial. It was found in all about the Medrash, and Steinjaltz was certainly controversial. But before then, historically, we have not embraced translations. If you study the history of translating the Talmud, there have been many attempts to do so, and many have met with serious opposition. If you even look, I've mentioned in the past, in the Haskama that Rabbi Yashiv gave to the Art Scroll Talmud, he says, we have no choice but to do this because there are others that are doing this. When times call for it, sometimes we have to be made for the Torah. We have to override the dinim of the Torah, which would prevent us from doing this. One of the reasons people were so opposed to translations, why? You have to acknowledge the Shanstein Talmud has changed learning in the entire Jewish community. Every Jew is able now to learn a Daf Gemara, which was something that was unheard of when I was growing up. It was unheard of. Unheard of. If you didn't learn in yeshiva, you pashut were not able to learn Gemara. Now it's open to everybody. So clearly accomplished a great thing. So one of the reasons they were opposed to it is because you're inevitably going to lose things in translation. So our school attempted to mitigate that problem by having elaborate footnotes which account for all the possible interpretations. But Lamaisa, it's not the same as learning in the original language. Because things are lost. So in a certain sense, it's a minimization or certainly a limitation that's placed in the way Torah can be interpreted, which is a change. Well, to change the interpretation of Torah is itself Yehag Val Yavar. So when it was translated into Greek, which was, even if it was done so, in earnest, it was done so with an attempt to preserve the accuracy of the translation, Lamaisa, things will change. That's Yehag Val Yavar, just like the Chet HaEgel. That's like Kasha Yom Yisrael Kenasha Seigel. Yeah, what do you want to ask?
I don't remember that. I'm sure everyone knows this place. It's like on the first. It's on the first daf of Avodah Zarah.
No.
Where it says that a guy that learns Torah is like a Kohen Gadol. So it's the place that says over there. Oh, so isn't that a guy that learns Torah is Chayav Misa? So what's the happen to be? Happen to be that he's called. So the place's answers over there because he's learned. I think he was learning Dinim that were Shaif to Goyim. So what could you say out here?
No, but here we're teaching them dinim that have nothing to do with them. They taught them all of Torah.
Oh, they taught them the whole Torah here.
Yeah, and with that, the fact that a guy could become Kohen Gadol, the Rambam quotes it in Shemitah v'Yovel, but it could just mean that he fulfills the Shevet Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, you know, in the proper way, not necessarily learning Torah beyond, you know, what's nogeya to him. But correct, yeah, probably limited to his domain, the Shevet Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. But you're right, that is a correct statement. The Gemara said that. So look back over here as well. There's another source which seems to indicate same idea. The Gemara says, the Mishnah says, Mesech v'Soyit, of course, Hakel, which was the Sukkot after the Shnas HaShmita, that the king would come to the Makom HaMikdash and they would read certain parts of the Torah. It's described in the Sukkot right after the Shnas HaShmita. It goes on in Eretz Yisrael now. Have you ever been there for Hakel? It's a tremendous thing, yeah. No. So the Mishnah describes that in the end of the period of the Bayis Sheni, Agrippas, even though there is a whole neighborhood in Yerushalayim, I think, called Agrippas, or at least a street, Agrippas, yeah, next to Machane Yehuda. Agrippas was not a Jewish Jewish king. He was a king of Yehuda, but he was not a Jewish king. He was the son of Herod the Great, who redid the Beis HaMikdash, who was an Eved, but okay. But Agrippas HaMelech, he was installed as the king, because he was the ruling party. So Agrippas HaMelech, Amad V'kibo V'kar, Amad, he read the Parshas Hakel. V'shibchu chacham, and everyone patted him on the back. U'kishigi l'loisucha l'asei salecha ish nachri. We got up to the pasuk, you're not allowed to have a non-Jewish king. Parsha shaved him. Zilgu ein of demos. He began to cry. Amru loy al tisyara agripas. Don't worry, agripas. Achinu ata, achinu ata. You're our brother, you're our brother. An honorary yid. Okay. Tanim shmeid Rav Nosson. At that time, here this is a euphemism. Sina Yisrael means the Talmid Chacham of the generation. They became Chayiv and Kaliyah and destruction. They did the wrong thing. They flattered Agrippas falsely. So you see, to offer false flattery is a mistake. You're not allowed to do it. And they shouldn't have done it. Why did they do it then? They know it. Says Taisvis, Yesh lefarish shelo b'makom sakana. It was a mistake because it wasn't b'makom sakana. They didn't have to do it. They thought they did. They didn't. Aval b'makom sakana mutter. If your life is in danger, you're allowed to offer false flattery to the person who's endangering your life. However, Rabbeinu Yoina in the Shari Tshuva, the Ga'onim in the Tshuva's Oitzer Ga'onim disagree. Even b'makom, no, of course their lives were in danger. Agrippus was the king of Yehuda. Their lives were in danger. But yet they were chayiv misa. They did the wrong thing. Nischayivu kalia. They deserved to be destroyed and killed. Why? Because they flattered him, even though their lives were in danger. What's so bad about false flattery? Yeah, it's Yaharik Val Yavor, says Rabbeinu Yonah. Chayiv ha'odim limtzer asma l'sakana val yasi nafshi avon ashma kazois. Rather than offering false flattery to a Russia, you have to give up your life. They should have given up their life, even though, of course, their lives... Tosfos says, no, their lives weren't in danger. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, of course their lives were in danger. Agrippus was the king. They should have given up their life rather than offer false flattery. Why is this Yaharik Val Yavor? So Moshe explains in Gris Moshe that it's because when you offer false flattery, you give a misimpression, a misrepresentation about what the values of the Torah are. You're saying, this is all right with us. Achinu ata, achinu ata. You're misrepresenting the mitzvahs of the Torah. That itself is Yaharik Val Yavor. Now, there are certain times, we have to say, there are certain times, you know, where lying is appropriate. There are certain times where lying is appropriate. The Gemara says in Masechtas Yevamos, an important Gemara, Mutar la'adam l'shanos b'pnei ha'shalom, Reb Nachman Omer mitzvah. It's a mitzvah l'shanos. Yeah. Come home, you know, late. Your wife says, where were you? So you say, you know, hopefully you weren't doing anything sinister or inappropriate, but, you know, Dre cupping around, whatever. So I was at work. So it's a mitzvah to tell her that. Why? Because you preserve the peace. Oh, she'll feel good. You're at work. You know? And then instead of that, you were draying around, you know, you're on a phone call with one of your buddies. Whatever, you know? Not doing anything wrong. Yeah. Mitzvah l'shanos b'nei ha'shalom. What are you going to get her angry? You were giving a ride to someone. She's going to say, why are you giving a ride? I'm waiting for you. Okay. Yeah. Maybe you shouldn't be giving the ride. We could test that another time. Chassid shayt. You shouldn't be doing chesed in the chesed of your wife. But okay, you know, situations can arise. You know, what did so-and-so say about me? Just lie. Don't say the truth. You know, mitzvah l'shanos b'nei ha'shalom. You're supposed to do that. It preserves the peace. I always say, my wife knows this, so she says, I can never believe anything you say. I don't know if you're just lying to keep the peace. It can backfire on you. But that's a mitzvah l'shanos b'nei ha'shalom. You're allowed to lie in order to keep the peace. That's the famous Gemara Masechta Ksuvos. Ketzer Merakdel b'nei ha'kala. What are you supposed to say in front of the kala? Beis Hillel's opinion is, kala nova chasuda. Beis Shammai were quite harsh. Kala kamoshehi. You say, call it as you see it. That's what Beis Shammai's opinion is. You can't lie. Will not tell a lie. Beis Hillel say, no, kala kanova b'chasuda. You say the right thing. Even if she's not nova b'chasuda. Mitzvah l'shanos b'nei ha'shalom. This guy obviously thought that she was. See, tell the guy. Says that she did kubetzes. Tell the guy. As you know, mitzvah l'davi b'shvachan. Afopi she'ein hashevach b'hen. Even if you don't see it, I'm sure you saw it. You know, the beauty is in the eye of the beholder. All right. You're supposed to do that. And there's a source for this. Why are you allowed to lie in order to keep the peace? After all, the Gemara tells us in Masechtas Yuma, Masechtas Sanhedrin, Chosamo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Emes. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's signature is Emes. Emes is truth. The most important midah of the Ribbono Shel Olam. In fact, Emes itself is Emes. Do you know this? It's from Shimshon Ashkapoya. You have to know this. Shimshon Ashkapoya says as a Aleph. Emes. If you spell out each one of the letters, Aleph, Mem, Tav, Hop, Azot. What is the Gematria of Aleph? 1. Mamet, 33. Pay and the Pace. Pesophis, anybody know?
81.
Huh? 600. Right, so in the advanced Gematria tables, yeah? So Tav is 400. Chav Sophis, 500. And then?
Pay.
Mem Sophis, 600. Pay Sophis, 700 and
Nun is 700.
I made a mistake.
Nun is 700.
There we go. Nun 700. Advanced. Okay, you have the 18 course that you imagine. So what's this? 800. So 30 times 800. What is that?
24,000.
Okay. What's mem? 40. What's mem? Mem sophis? 600. So 40 times 600?
24.
24. This 400 times 10? 4,000 times 6? 4,000 times 6? 24,000. So each one of the letters is truth of meaning is exactly consistent. Fine. MS is the signature of a Kodesh Baruch. It's a mitzvah to tell the truth, the most important MS. Even MS itself has to be MS. So look over here. The Medrash Rabbah says in Parashas Bereishis, when a Kodesh Baruch Hu wanted to create the world, so Nasu Malachi Asharis Kitos Kitos. The Malachi Asharis prevailed upon a Kodesh Baruch Hu. You know, he had lobbyists. Some were lobbying that a Kodesh Baruch Hu should create the world. Who is lobbying a Kodesh Baruch Hu should create the world? Chesed. Chesed said Yivra. Because people do chasadim. People are going to chasadim. But then, MS said no. People are full of lies. We live in an Alma de Shikra, a world full of lies. Don't create human beings. You'll lead to Sheker. I'm a lo Yivra. Shekula Moro Ishkarim. Then, Shalom said the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Where is that? Oh, it's not here. I don't know, I left that part out. Shalom said that Kodesh Baruch, the Medrash says, not to create the world. People are constantly fighting. But Mishpat said that Kodesh Baruch Hu, to create the world, because people have the judicial systems, and we're mamid the Mishpat of Kodesh Baruch Hu in this world. So there were different lobbying groups. Mishpat and Chesed said to create the world. MS and Shalom said not to create the world. So what are Kodesh Baruch Hu, two against two? What are Kodesh Baruch Hu do? Hishlich MS Arza. Kodesh Baruch Hu threw Emes to the ground, and he said, Emes mei ha'aretz titzmach, Emes will grow from the ground, and Kodesh Baruch Hu created the world. So what happened over here? It was two against two, and Kodesh Baruch Hu took one out, the disqualified Emes, and threw it to the ground. Therefore, it was two against one. Mishpat and Chesed prevailed over Shalom, and therefore Kodesh Baruch Hu created the world. What happened over here? So Reb Chaim explained this Medrash of Shechter quotes in one of his books. What happened here in the Medrash was the following. Emes and Shalom said, Kodesh Baruch Hu cannot create the world because the two can't coexist. You can't have Emes and Shalom. You know why? If you always tell the truth. I say exactly, I caught as I see it. I shoot from the hip, as they say. Yeah? So then you're going to insult everyone. There are children who do that. And we write it off because they're children. They're not socially aware. But it's the wrong thing to do. It's highly insulting. Our whole life is about filtering our mouths and training ourselves and controlling ourselves to speak in a way that is not offensive to others. Perhaps it's not entirely truthful in what I really think in my heart. It would be nice if I could mold my way of thinking and see people in a positive light as well. So in a higher madriga, but even less than that, even if I see negativity, I shouldn't speak it in my in the way that we speak. But it's impossible to have these two coexist. MS in its truest form is highly insulting, and you can't have Shalom. And if you have Shalom, if all you are interested in peace, you're going to always compromise an MS. Then you stand for nothing, and your peace is meaningless. You two can't have both. So Kadosh Baruch Hu says, Hishlich MS Arza, says Reb Chaim, Kadosh Baruch Hu said is, whenever there's a conflict between MS and Shalom in this world, Shalom prevails. And that's how the two can coexist, and that's how Kadosh Baruch Hu created the world. So Shalom prevails over Emes. That mid of the Ribbono Shel Olam, that a Kodesh Baruch Hu is Oisa Shalom, prevails over the fact that a Kodesh Baruch Hu is Chaisamai Emes. They're both midas that we have to strive to emulate. We have to be peaceful. Kodesh Baruch Hu is Oisa Shalom. Kodesh Baruch Hu is also Emes. We have to follow, emulate, Volach, the Bedrach of the Pesuk and Parshas Kisavo. We have to emulate a Kodesh Baruch Hu's midas. But when there's a conflict between these two, so then it is Shalom that prevails. You can even have a conflict. This is an important Magen Avraham. Magen Avraham quotes two Gemaras that imply the following. Magen Avraham says, let's say I know I'm about to say a Dvar Torah. I know if I say it in the name of the person who said it, you won't listen to me. You don't like that guy. You don't. He's not your Schnitt. He's not your Rebbe. He's not your Mahalach. If I say it immediately, you're going to be biased against it. So what do? I say, no. He didn't say it. I say it in the name of somebody else who never said it. Well, that's anonymous. I say it in my own name. If I say it in my own name, okay, maybe you'll accept it from me. If I say it in the name of, some other gadol, fill in the blank, who you like more, I'm convinced it's true. So I could say it in my own name. You might not accept it from me. So I say it in the name of, sir. I heard from a Maisha. Oh, I heard from a Maisha. What am I going to say? I heard from a Maisha. So can you do that? I'm convinced it's true. Says the Magen Avraham, it's not in our day. You know, this would be much more controversial. But says the Magen Avraham, Im Shama Din, Venira Loi Shalocha Kach Muter La Amro B'Shem Adam Gadol Ki Hechid V'Kavim Mineh. I'm convinced the Psak is true. I can say it in the name of a Gadol who never said it. Wow. How can I do that? And there is. This Gemara says, Mesechta Seirvan, Psachim, he said, people said things in the names of people who never said them in order that people should accept it from them. How can I do that? If I'll call in the name of this Rebbe in this community, they'll never accept it in my name. So I say, oh, Ramesha said it. Salvechik said it. Salvechik said it. So how can you do that? You're lying. So I think the answer is, you're lying in Torah nonetheless. Lying in Torah is not a small thing. I think the answer is, because here you're trying to be Mamed Emes. I'm trying to install truth. I'm trying to convince you of a psak which I believe is truthful. But if I say you're not going to listen to me, so the only way I could establish Emes, establish truth, is say the name of Ramesha. Oh, now you'll accept it from me. So then, fine. You're being Mamed Emes. I have a conflict in Emes itself. So in order that Emes, the psak, should come out, I'll lie about who said it. Fine. That's a similar idea to Mishan, but Pnei Shalom. It's an inter-MS dilemma. Fine. So even in Torah, there are certain times where it's permitted to lie. If I want to, to elevate, to emphasize what I believe is truthful. But over here, Rabbi Isai, Ula lied. Ula lied about what Rabbi Lazar said in order to avoid the social pressure of Rav Nachman attacking him. That's exactly what the Gemara says later on. That Flamechesim at Alv is Yaharik Vel Yavor, says the Yamshu Shlomo. Agrippus, they were in Ischaibu Kalia because they misrepresented the Torah. How could they do such a thing? How could Ula lie over here about what Rav Elazar said? You hear my kasha? So I believe that the answer is found in the very next line. The answer is Rav Nachman heard about it. The minute Rav Nachman left, Ula said to the Yalim Zotzvisin, you should know what I said to Rav Nachman was not true. And Rav Nachman himself realized that. He said he only did it to avoid the debate. There was no misrepresentation of the Torah ultimately. It was just he didn't want to debate the issue. So you see that in order to avoid, a debate about something, a momentary, kind of social conflict, it's permitted. For momentarily. Afterwards, there's an obligation to be mefarsim, to publicize what is the real psak. And that's what Ula did. The minute Reb Nachman left, he told them what it really was. And Reb Nachman himself interpreted. He just wanted to avoid the debate. There's no mitzvah to be involved in conflict. But to misrepresent the Torah could be Yahar Vayav. I don't think over here there was misrepresentation because even Reb Nachman understood that he only did this to avoid the debate. So maybe that's the answer over here to this dilemma. All right, Reb. I'm going to show the next time.